Good morning. This is 1 in 36, a presentation from Anderson Center for Autism, celebrating their centennial in 2024. 1 in 36 is a weekly show devoted to autism spectrum disorder.
Good morning and welcome to 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Bozensky, Chief Development Officer at Anderson Center for Autism. And today I'm very happy to be speaking with Tracy Stoll, who is the CEO and the Executive Director of the Common Room out of Massachusetts. Tracy, good morning. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was looking at your website a little bit earlier, and first of all, it's a beautiful website, very nicely laid out, easy to sort of navigate. But I know we're going to send people over there, you know, throughout the show to take a listen, take a look at what you have to offer. But I'd love to start with you just talking a little bit about yourself and your background, leading us from wherever you want to start to where you are today.
Perfect. Yeah, it actually has a lot to do with where I am today. So basically, I grew up in the Hudson Valley and then moved up to Boston area for graduate school. I decided to major in special ed and regular ed, sort of a dual certification, and become a teacher. I'm from sort of a teacher family. And my very first practicum out was with an integrated early childhood classroom. And the particular students in that classroom had various diagnoses of autism spectrum disorder. And I fell in love with the way that they saw the world. Mm-hmm. It was just so factual and reminding me of all the things that we miss, you know? So
yeah, that's a great
way
to
put it. I fell in love with it. From there, I went on to teach integrated classrooms for a few years. And then I also started working part-time for an organization called Mass General Hospital Aspire. At that time, it was youth care. And I was one of their on-site camp directors for a couple of summers. But during the school year, I would teach social groups as well. And I had wonderful mentors, and I got really introduced into what is this whole facet of social skills and what's needed. I went on from there to get training in social thinking. Mm-hmm. And I did that probably when Michelle Garcia-Winner was first bringing things over to the East Coast. So it was really exciting. And then on to specialize in autism and social emotional learning. So that was sort of my background in terms of training over a span of probably 20 years.
Okay.
As I was teaching, I grew my family. My oldest son is adopted, and we found out at 22 months that he was on the spectrum and some potential other concerns. He started ABA right away. He did amazing, started talking. It was wonderful. And again, he's now 23, almost 24. So we're going back two decades when you would approach a school system and they maybe didn't know what ABA was.
Very different.
So a lot of advocacy had to happen, even also the dietary conditions and things like that. So from there, continued to teach. My second son, he's biological. Turns out he's on the spectrum with other concerns. So it was like, okay. So at that point, I have to be honest, as a parent and a professional, I said, I can't do this. I have to get out of this profession. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be patient for my own kids. And so I took a break for a little bit, and I found that I was trucking them all over the place for their services. And then I also realized I kept getting called for part-time work in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is what I do. So circled back around. That son is now 21, almost 22. And then I have a third son who is also biological, who's a senior in high school. So my life has really evolved around, how do I help them? How do I help other kids? How do I immerse myself in the autism community and be a part of the solution and be a part of resiliency and, you know, really how we look at individuals and honor the value that they bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So for a number of years, I parented, went through all the therapies, all of the things. So I lived sort of one foot in each side. And then probably about, 15 years ago, I decided that I was tired of doing all the running around. I had a skill set. So I opened a social emotional learning center. And over the course of 15 years, I grew that in my area to employ all different facets of behaviorists, counseling social workers, speech and language pathologists, special educators. And we grew and provided a gamut of resources for individuals with autism and their families, ages 2 through 22, and a variety of different services. After that, COVID hit. So when COVID hit, We stayed afloat for a little bit. And then during that time, I was approached by the founders of the Common Room, which is where I work now. So very long story, but my whole life has been immersed in it. And I was, they asked me to help them sort of kind of do some focus groups for young adults that are between the ages of 18 and 33 and really kind of get a sense of what was missing, what they needed socially and recreationally in the Boston area. How could we meet their need? And how do we begin developing and writing programs that don't involve therapeutic instruction, but rather have individuals who are trained in that, who embed it and make it feel really normal and really fun. But, you know, just provide a sense, a conduit for young adults to meet one another and develop relationships. So long story short, that's how I ended up there. And the Common Room has been in business now for about 3 years in Boston. And we do our activities virtually or within the community. And we recently were approved to open a clubhouse that was donated to us right near Boston College. We're very excited. We're going to open this summer, and it will become a beautiful place for our members to spend some time together also.
And I just want to, we're going to come back to a lot of what you just shared. Thank you for that whole story. It was perfectly sort of, it's a lot. And you are right. I mean, you really have been immersed in it for so long. It's sort of, you know, a lot of people talk about their niche or just, you know, sort of the universe pointing them in a direction. I feel like that was a lot of universe.
It's a lot of karma, a lot of universe going around there.
A lot of stuff happening there. So, but I just want to add, I'm a huge fan of Boston. It's a great city. And so in what you're doing with the Common Room and then this new clubhouse that's going to be open near Boston College, I mean, what a wonderful place to also be engaging, you know, young people to in a natural, really natural, organic way in an environment with so many opportunities for social engagement and recreation, and volunteerism and all sorts of things, because I feel like that's just such fertile ground for something. There's literally something for everybody there. So, so that's great. All right. So, I appreciate you sharing about your family and your three sons. Can you just we have a couple minutes before we have to go to a break. And I want to save the second half of the show really to dive into the Common Room, the activities, how people can get more information, you know, who is it for, all of that. So just in these last couple minutes of the first half, you know, how were your decisions, not sort of leading into where you are with your career now, but also your daily decisions, as you know, I'm sure things come your way all the time. Should we expand over here? Should we say yes, yes to this collaboration? Are we going to compromise our core if we go in this direction? How much do you bring your personal experience as a parent into those professional decisions that are being thrown at you every day?
That is a fantastic question. Not sure anyone's ever asked me that before. So it just shows how you're immersed too in the community. I have to be honest, it impacts every decision I make every day. There's always a balance between being a professional and then also personally having that in my life as well. In this particular capacity, it really helps me to think through what families or individuals might be experiencing in their daily life. And then as a professional, am I able to provide something for them? Am I able to meet that need? And if I'm not able to, then because we just don't have the capacity or it's not our mission, you know, we'd be broadening too much, then how can I help them? And that's usually how I respond to everything, whether it be in my head or verbally, how can I help you? So my mission in general is if someone doesn't fit the profile of one of our members at the Common Room, then I like to know that I have two or three referrals that I can take the time to send to the family so that this wasn't a wasted phone call. Because as a parent, you know, your time is valuable and there's so many calls and the emotional investment in every call. I don't want this to be a wasted phone call. I want to then provide referrals that the next step, maybe they work, maybe they don't, but it's something. And
it's another step to take.
I
can very much relate to that. That's how we work in our admissions department at Anderson. That's the way, just me personally with my role, and I agree with you. I've heard so many times over the years that families, once they make that first phone call, it's so almost make it or break it. It's like there's such fragility and fear and just, I don't know how to help my child. And that's such a scary place to be. And so you take that first step and And it really is like either someone's going to help or try to help, or someone's going to make you feel like that was a waste of your time, which probably sets you back potentially 6 months, a year before you get to that place again where you're ready to reach out. So I love that you do that. I think it's a really simple but effective way to keep the momentum moving for families in a good direction without feeling like, well, if I don't have the whole answer, I may not as well, you know, bother to try. So I love that. Right. I appreciate that that's what you do. And I think you're right that I'm sure comes from being a parent, but also as a parent, probably interacting over the years with other parents. So I'm glad I asked that because now our listeners know what to expect, you know, when they're interacting with you and your team. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to get really into the common room, the services, what to expect, how to find out more information, how to get involved. This is Eliza Brzezinski. You're listening to 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. And we'll be right back.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with the link.
Okay. Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Somewhere there's a river rushing through the woods while someone rushes through their day. There's a mountain looking up at the sky while someone looks down at their phone. A trail waiting to be walked while someone waits for a latte. This world is full of somewheres waiting for someone just like you. So go see yours at 154 National Forests and 20 Grasslands. And to learn more, visit nationalforests.org. The National Forest Foundation. See your somewhere.
Wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind. Like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
And now, 1 in 36 continues on 100.7 WHUD. This is a weekly community affairs program presented by the Anderson Center for Autism.
Welcome back to 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Brzezinski, and I'm talking with Tracy Stoll, who's the executive director of the Common Room in Boston, Massachusetts. Tracy, thank you for the background in the first part of the show. Really, I mean, wealth of knowledge and experience. And you strike me as the kind of person who is happy to take that experience, both personal and professional, and keep applying it to the next thing that you're doing, which just makes you an excellent resource for the community. So I do appreciate you taking the time today. Now, let's talk about the Common Room. First of all, what's the website so people can kind of go there?
So the website is thecommonroom.org.
Okay. So we'll repeat that at the end again. And also we'll put it in our, you know, when we share it on our social media, you can do as well.
Great.
But tell us about what the Common Room is and give some examples of, you know, actual activities that are going on or times when you've seen something really just click for an individual or a group of individuals, anything you want to talk about, but we just want to paint the picture of it.
Absolutely. So the Common Room actually emerged from the vision, I think, of many, many parents that have experienced watching their high-functioning, high-cognitive young, their child with autism grow and experience some social isolation and experience relationship difficulty, things like that, and missing that sense that we all need of having one true, genuine, reciprocal friendship that keeps us going. And as our kids age, they lack the opportunities to go out and do what their peers are doing, and yet they still have the interest to do so. So that becomes that self-fulfilling. It's easier to stay home and isolate. It's easier to meet people on technology than it is to take that risk and go out and potentially experience anxiety and rejection. So our founders are Stephanie Long and her husband, Dave Long. They have spent their life building programs. They were encouraged by their own experiences as a family, building programs to help individuals, children with autism, develop from a young age all the way through adulthood. And they have the time and the resources to come together to build a board, to build this program. Mm-hmm. So basically what they decided to do was have a clubhouse that was meant to represent going to a friend's house. A home away from home that you don't live at. But, you know, if you have that best friend that you're going to go hang out at their house, that's what we needed. They mm-hmm. also had a lot of high expectations around what could that provide and what would that look like. Number one, they wanted it to be philanthropic. Obviously, there's going to have to be some small expense, and there's a lot of fundraising that has to be done. Right now, we exist through a lot of private fundraising, and we will expand out. But at the end of the day, if a member was a good member, compatible, and benefiting from the common room, then we have scholarship funding. We don't want to turn people away because finances are a concern. We know many Sure. people in our clientele have difficulty sometimes obtaining a job or keeping a job. So they began to, with the support of Liberty Mutual here in Boston, they began to build their website, get their news out, kind of garner the interest, do the focus groups. And the result is that we are able to provide social and recreational opportunities for young adults in the Boston area that have either a diagnosis and a profile of high cognitive, high functioning autism. And when I say that to most people, what I mean is when I meet an individual, I'm really looking to see where they are developmentally with their language, with their social skills, intellectually, are they at a place where they're able to function within a social recreational setting, within a small group that has a ratio of about one staff to four or five adults?
Okay.
So we're thinking about
that's very helpful. Thank you for
yes,
that.
It's really important because it makes a huge difference. And, you know, we're looking at their levels of reciprocal conversation, their levels of self-advocacy, their levels of anxiety and emotional regulation, all of the things that we know are needed to be successful and have a nice, positive social experience when you're out in the community or you're with others. We're also really looking at their interest levels and what are they interested in? What makes them tick? What makes them excited? What is going to be what they want to talk about? And where do they find their people? You know, we all look for our people. I have my friends that I want to hang out with. And I choose that over some other things. And we need to represent that humanistic side that our young adults want that too.
Yeah.
So basically, let me just back up a little bit here. I will say that some of our members, we are a co-ed. We have both male, female members. Right now we span the ages of post high school 18. So they have to have had their diploma and they can be in a transition program, but they're sort of emerging into the adult world. They've finished okay. with their school world. And right now our members go up in age till about 33, 34. Mm-hmm. A lot of our older members will say, are you going to throw me out? And I'll say, no, of course not. You know, our hope is to grow with you. It's just that we were trying to capture an age range that we could begin with. So basically, some of our members that we're getting in most recent now as we're growing are ones that struggle with diagnosis of anxiety, ones that struggle with diagnosis of nonverbal learning disorder, some who have no diagnosis at all, but they've always known that socially it's been really challenging to build relationships and fit in. So, mm-hmm. You know, and I love that. I love that we're looking at the person, mm-hmm. Not just the diagnosis, yeah. because that can really be impacted by where they grew up, what means their family had, things like that. Mm-hmm. So we look at that and we program with a staff that has some veteran professionals like myself, you know, without saying age. And mm-hmm. we try to find a lot of staff that are within the same age range as our members. Mm-hmm. And we will offer training to our staff. We have some staff that are licensed professionally within the industry. We have some staff who are pursuing a similar license. And we have some staff who are just really innately, they get it. They're awesome. Maybe they're a sibling. And we like to, when we do our activities, have it staffed by what you would call a peer, somebody mm-hmm. who members would want to hang out with and spend time with.
Right.
So, in terms of activities right now, we had to start during COVID. So we began virtually. We had things such as guest speakers on interesting topics, cooking lessons that we provided virtually. We That's provided great. Escape rooms virtually. We did sort of like hangout brunch together virtually, you know, really connecting socially. We continue with that. One of our most popular activities is Jackbox TV gaming night. I mean, we just have to keep adding sessions because they love it. And so then in terms of in the community, we offer things such as we've gone sailing, we've gone rock climbing, we've done museum tours, we go to sporting events, mm-hmm. we go to musicals and shows. We also have really simple events like going out to dinner together, meeting yeah. out for dinner, you know, really thinking about what are your peers doing? What do you want to do? You want to see a movie together? You want to hang out? And those are always really well attended to the point where we are constantly watching enrollment and thinking about who didn't get into this session because we're trying to stay to our mission of a small group. Mm-hmm. You know, we want it to be a conversation that can flow. We want relationships to be able to build. And always thinking, how can we add more and more? So what I will say is that some of the successes that we have seen over the last 3 years, which just will pull at your heart is, you know, people say to me, is this a social group? I don't want a social group. I've done it my whole life. And I say, nope, it's not a social group. We are social opportunity. We don't make you do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here to hopefully pique your interest and have you come out and meet other members who have similar lifestyle and profiles, social profiles you that you may want to spend time with. Once they're able to an individual, we have to vet them through an application process to make sure mm-hmm. there's compatibility. We then will have them sign onto our website. We have an app that they use on their phone that we communicate through to help with information. They are able to look at what we post, choose any activity. We do 5 to 7 activities a week across different areas. And then basically some of the wins that we've had is that we've have individuals that are dating. We have individuals that have met and become roommates. We have individuals that will snap a picture for us and send to us on a text excited that they met out for brunch with these new friends without us. And that's the whole goal. Like we want to connect and we want them to thrive. So that's some of the success.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. The information, the detail, but also the success stories. I love what you said before about, you know, just really breaking it down for anybody listening that, you know, we all have our people. And actually there's a colleague of mine at Anderson who talks about one of her family members finding his people. And that is exactly the terminology that he used when he was telling her about it. And this is years of trying, thinking this is going to be it. This is going to be it. This is going to be it. And then sort of saying, okay, I found my people. And for her, I think that it's a real sense of goes back to, you know, what you want for your family members, for your loved ones, you know, just to be happy. And that's such a huge part of it. So I like that you're presenting it as an opportunity. I think it's really important for our listeners to hear that, look, if your loved one is tired of being put in a group, that's a different feeling as being told, this is where you go from 12:15 to 1 o'clock, as opposed to this is an opportunity that you can take or not take. So for more information about The Common Room, please visit thecommonroom.com. org. That's thecommonroom.org. And I just want to say thank you to Tracy Stoll, Executive Director of The Common Room, for being on the show today. It's been a real pleasure learning about you and your background, your experience, and everything that The Common Room is offering in terms of opportunities for people in the Boston area. I'm really excited to hear what comes in the future. This is 1 in 36, the weekly talk show on topics related to autism spectrum disorder. I'm your host, Eliza Bozensky. And remember, Anderson cares.
You've been listening to 1 in 36, a weekly presentation from Anderson Center for Autism, celebrating their centennial in 2024. Join them for another edition of the show next weekend.